He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo. 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk. Just take those old records on the shelf. I sit and listen to them by myself. Today's music ain't got the same soul. I like that old time of rock and roll. Don't try to take me to a disco.
Melman and Crash are dancing in their underwear. Two announcements. First is Dan Donovan, the victorious congressional candidate from Staten Island and Bay Ridge, will be joining us live at 10:20. The district attorney, now forever associated with the Eric Garner case, will be one. What was his rate there, the margin of victory?
Oh, 60-40.
60-40. Should have been 70-30.
60-40 is pretty big.
Pretty big. That's one announcement. Donovan at 10:20. Also, to the best with Mother's Day coming, the best female caller each hour will get a gift basket worth hundreds from Charmonie free. So that's, but don't call now. Don't call until something moves you. Because the best female caller per hour will get a free multi-hundred-dollar value gift basket free. Welcome, everybody. 8 minutes after 10 o'clock here on 77 WABC, the sixth day of May. Kind of a, you know, coming down the elevator, a relief that it wasn't in the high 80s. You know, the fact that it was 70, I just started me thinking about August. But here's what I'm really thinking about. Here's what has been weighing on me. You know, after coming home from that week, that highly charged emotional week covering the Baltimore riots, the riots that followed the funeral last Monday of 25-year-old Freddie Gray in Baltimore, who died, of course, in police custody. That investigation proceeding. Now there's some issues on whether or not the knife that Freddie Gray was wielding was really legal or not. As that plays out, I posted something on Facebook this Monday, just a couple of days ago, that touched the chord across the country that I think bears repeating. So here you had the Baltimore riots following the funeral of 25-year-old Freddie Gray. What I posted on Monday and what I've been talking about the last couple of days is the death of another 25-year-old. In this case, the hero New York City cop, Brian Moore. Brian, who is the son of a cop, shot in the face, as you know, in Queens, New York, over the weekend at point-blank range, fatally wounded, shot on Saturday night, fatally wounded Demetrius Blackwell, the dirtbag, thug, violent career criminal who shot him, arrested several hours after the fact. When folks in that Queens Village neighborhood pointed Blackwell out to detectives investigating the outrageous assassination of the cop. What I said on Monday about Officer Moore's death that resonated with so many of you is that, as far as I know, there are no civil rights marches planned to protest the cop's death. We won't be hearing from Occupy Wall Street. We won't be hearing from the kids from City College or the folks at the NAACP. We won't hear, I'm sure, from Reverend Sharpton or sports stars or hip-hop artists. We won't hear from anybody but fellow cops and friends and neighbors and average citizens. Folks like those who lined the streets of Bethpage, Long Island, yesterday when the ambulance carrying the body of Officer Brian Moore arrived at the Frank J. Chappie Funeral Home to get it ready for Thursday's wake, tomorrow's wake, and Friday's burial. I said in Baltimore that unless a perpetrator is threatening murder or mayhem, nobody deserves to die in police custody. Not Freddie Gray. Not Eric Garner out on Staten Island. Nobody, not black, white, Latino, Asian, nobody deserves to die in police custody if they're not threatening to kill somebody else, murder, mayhem. Nobody should die. The cops should not be the judge and the jury and the executioner. Nobody should die in police custody. But as should be obvious, and we have to get reminded time and time again, urban cops, all cops, but urban cops especially, deal with the worst among us, the worst. They deal with just plain folks, sure. They got traffic and they have this and that and the other thing. But when push comes to shove, they are the front line. They deal with the worst among us. They deal with the violent, predatory scumbags like this Demetrius Blackwell who shot the cop in the face. And before we judge the actions of a cop on the mean streets, don't we have to walk a mile in their shoes? Don't we have to ask ourselves what you or I would have done under those same exigent circumstances? Easy to judge a cop from the comfort of your living room, from the safety of your, you know, a bar stool or some other place where you're having a conversation about, oh, how about those cops? Easy. Put yourself in their shoes. In those circumstances. Then you ask yourself what you would have done. That's why all these cops get acquitted. Because that's what juries do. And on the other hand, when one of our cops falls in the line of duty, like Brian Moore, we have to remember what Brian Moore, what they sacrificed to keep the peace. Officer Moore is dead. He was 25 years old, had his whole life in front of him. He was 25 years old, just like that guy Freddie Gray, 25 years old. And so all you passionate protesters, all you people who are in my face in Baltimore, don't cops' lives matter too? Is Jay in New Jersey calling 866 Geraldo? What's up, Jay?
Hey, Geraldo. You need to realize that the guy who shot the cop was probably going to get life or death, you know, penalty, you know, through the system. So for people to protest a guy who's already behind bars would be pointless. So, I mean, you really
you protest
need to
not
stop,
the guy. You,
know,
you protest in favor of the cop. You protest. You tell cops that you understand what they go through. You understand the pressures of their job.
All jobs are stressful. All jobs, people get paid. No one's forced to do anything. You know, everyone feels
all jobs are not like Brian Moore's job getting shot in the face, Jay. Come on, man. You sound like a smart, sensitive person.
Security guards, you know, people, the troops in the military, a lot of jobs are dangerous. The guy who runs the electric lines have a chance of getting fried. You know, people who drive trains, all jobs are dangerous. Everyone feels bad.
So you don't cut the cops any slack?
Why people protest against a guy who shot him, you know, against him, if he's already behind bars? If, you know, everyone deserves to go through the justice system, you know, whether you're a cop or you're a citizen who did something towards a cop. That's all people are asking for, you know, fair treatment of people. So you can't just put people on a pedestal. Well,
excellent call,
cop,
Jay.
I hear you, brother.
Excellent call. Thank you. Is Danielle. Thank you so much for calling, Danielle.
Hi, Geraldo. I'm afraid I'm going to cry on air. I'm sorry. I'm just so moved by this police officer, a young officer who served his force with such courage and such decency. And there's so much anger and hatred in this country right now. And, you know, I don't think any person deserves to die in custody by the cops. But, you know, we remember those people's names. And I did not watch David Letterman, so I don't know if the president actually named Officer Brian Moore or if he just talked about an officer. But this gentleman's name deserves to be in our minds just the way Mr. Gray's name should be in our minds and hearts, Mr. Gardner's name, Trayvon Martin. I mean,
Danielle, I love you.
There's too much anger out there, and this gentleman was trying to protect people.
Love
this
you.
Officer.
Thank you, Danielle. Thank you. We had his back, but he didn't need our help. He cruised to victory. crushing his Democratic opponent to win the congressional seat in Staten Island and Bay Ridge, Brooklyn. We welcome the victorious congressman-elect, the current district attorney of Staten Island, Dan Donovan, joins us. Congratulations.
Thank you so much, Geraldo. And I did need your help because it was your listeners that put me over the top.
Well, they really back you. And, you know, you've had I just wanted you to listen to one of them. Here's a punch in Steve there. Steve, you got Dan Donovan, your new congressman, on the line. What do you want to say?
Congratulations, Congressman-elect. I'm in the 11th Congressional District in Brooklyn, and I convinced my usually Democratic-leaning wife to vote for you last night.
That's big. That's big.
That is absolutely huge.
The reason is I find two things. One, your friends are tell me a lot about yourself. And Dan Donovan had the support of the police, the firefighters, the construction workers, business owners, the hardworking middle and working class people. And his Democratic rival had the support of Bill de Blasio, a lot of the Occupy Wall Street crowd. And what convinced my wife, I believe, was a viral video of a left-wing group called Unifying America that were trying to influence this race. My wife watched it and said, who the hell are these people? They don't look like they're from our district. They look like they're from the Tompkins Square Park area of Manhattan.
It's my old neighborhood.
This race, it actually backfired. And
Steve, I got it. Well, there you go, Congressman-elect. That's one of your new constituents. How do you feel today? How do you feel the day after?
It's numbing, but it's still so exciting. And it's an incredible responsibility, Geraldo, but a wonderful opportunity for us to get some things done for the people, not only in the 11th Congressional District, but as the only Republican in the New York City congressional delegation.
Which is one of the reasons I backed you, just to have some kind of integration in the congressional district. My goodness, and the congressional delegation for the largest city in the nation to have just Democrats representing is the way to get cut out of a lot of benefits and just respect that the city needs in Washington.
Particularly at a time when the Republicans control both the House of Representatives and the United States Senate. It's a great opportunity to bring resources back to the district for the 11th Congressional District, for the city, for the state, for the entire region.
The Congressman-elect, Dan Donovan, is my guest, the current Staten Island District Attorney. You won big. At the same time, Bill de Blasio, the mayor in his first term, has suffered a real hit at the polls in terms of his approval. Is there a relationship there?
You know, I don't know. I mean, I think the mayor and myself have different philosophies about what government's role should be in people's lives. You know, I believe in less government. I believe in less taxes. I believe in less regulations. I think government should provide for people things they can't do for themselves, like pick up your garbage, deliver your mail, and come to your aid during a time of a disaster like Superstorm Sandy. And then we ought to let you select what school you want to educate your child. And we ought to let you select what health care provider you want to provide health care for your family. So I think it's different philosophies, and apparently the people of the 11th Congressional District overwhelmingly believe in mine.
You know, you will be, rightly or wrongly, forever associated with the Eric Garner grand jury and the fact that they did not indict, the officers were not indicted in that case. How do you feel about that burden?
Well, you know what? I took an oath of office to fulfill that oath and to do what was right under my responsibilities as a district attorney. There were people who misinterpreted the role of the district attorney in the grand jury proceedings. We tried to educate people, correct them about what the role of the district attorney's office is. Our position, our place is not to get indictments. Our place is to present impartial evidence to 23 citizens of this great community and let them decide whether criminal liability should be imposed on somebody. So I think a lot of people expected a different outcome. A lot of people thought that I should have done something different than be an impartial overseer of the grand jury. And I think that would cause a lot of people some uncertainty, unable to understand the results. But we've been trying to tell people what the role of the DA is all along. And some people listened and some didn't.
What about race relations, not just in the 11th District, citywide, nationwide? We see polls now that say we're banging along the bottom.
You know, Harold, I mean, you look at the people of our area, particularly Staten Island. When people wanted to voice their opposition of the grand jury's decision in the investigation into Eric's death, we had peaceful protests. We had police officers handing water to protesters. We had protesters thanking police officers. We didn't have any looting. We didn't have anybody breaking storefront windows. We didn't have anybody burning police cars. I'm the chief law enforcement officer for Staten Island. Every day I protect people's rights to assemble, people's right to free speech, and I'm a believer in that. And the people on Staten Island did it properly. They did it lawfully. They ought to be proud of the way they did, and the police department ought to be real proud about how they handled it.
You know, I was out at I agree with that. I was out at Staten Island, at the College of Staten Island last night. We started a lecture series that I'm supporting there at the college. We want to make it the college a magnet, the Oxford of the study of social work and care of the disabled, the intellectually disabled, you know, thinking of the best ways to deal with people who are autistic and so forth. So I'm going to be coming to you for some help, hitting you up, because I think that private citizens really have to do a lot, but I think the College of Staten Island with President Fritz in charge is really going to go places. I think that you should be very proud of that institution on your home island.
It's a wonderful university. It's the hub of a lot of people's lives, where they're being educated there. It's an incredible employer of people from Staten Island. And it's a real gem, a great value for education. I mean, throughout the campaign, I was talking about how expensive it is for people to educate their children. And my buddy, as you know, I'm about to have a child for the first time 2 weeks from now.
Mazel tov.
18 years from now, I'm going to have to figure out how to pay for my child's education. So this College of Staten Island is a crown jewel. It's a great value to educate your children. And look at the things like you're describing that aren't traditionally part of a university, isn't part of a school that they get involved in. So we're real proud of it being here on Staten Island, and the president's doing a wonderful job there.
He's doing a great job, and you're going to see, you know, the arrogance of men who have children in middle age. You're going to see what that's all about 18 years from now. And you're still going to, like, the ball games and dressing them up for the prom.
Well, I'm going to be probably the oldest guy at Chuck E. Cheese in a couple years.
Dan Donovan, ladies and gentlemen, the triumphant congressman-elect from the 11th District. We congratulate you again, and don't be a stranger.
Geraldo, thanks for having me on the show. Have a great show, buddy.
All right, thank you, man. I also want to say, you know, I still miss Michael Grimm, too, and I wish him the best. I want him to work his way through these legal problems and come out smiling on the other side. We'll be right back. It's all about you now, 866 Geraldo, beginning in Brooklyn with Susan. Hi, Susan, welcome.
Oh, Geraldo. The photograph of the Officer Moore's father saluting the ambulance taking...
Heartbreaking.
So we see where, I mean, the courage. I mean, you're a father, so if you can just imagine what that would take.
I can't imagine. It's just too painful to even put your mind around something like that. It's just, it's horrifying.
Yes, but so we see where the young man got his courage. But I can't help but think about, you know, Mother's Day coming up and his mother.
They can make everybody cry, Susan.
And just that, you know, we can just all pray that she can somehow, her suffering can be mitigated, knowing that her son was so valuable, his 25 years, and how proud and how much all of us will be praying for them.
25 years old. I mean, do you remember being 25 years old and your whole life is in front of you?
Oh, yeah.
It's just the beginning of everything.
Absolutely. I do want to just say this. What happened to keeping dangerous criminals locked up? Why is he out on parole?
That's an excellent question. You know, an excellent question. You, on the one hand, and thank you very much, Susan. On the one hand, you have people being arrested. Not so much in New York anymore, although we had more than our share, vastly more than our share, for nonviolent drug offenses. You know, marijuana, for example. And then you have parolees, like this guy was convicted of attempted murder. He was convicted of attempted murder. This is Demetrius Blackwell,
right,
who shot and killed Officer Brian Moore. I mean, attempted murder, and he was out on the street on parole. And the attempted murder conviction was, I think, his sixth, 25 years old, his sixth, and he did 5 years. So I mean, he was a violent crime machine. You know what I mean? This is someone who is unalterable. I believe in redemption and second chances. So you get second chance, third chance, fourth chance, fifth chance. Go to jail 5 years for attempted murder. Then you get out, and now you're packing. And the first thing you do when you're confronted with an officer, not with an officer with a gun, right? What are you fiddling with there? You whip it out and you shoot him in the face. A kid. You shoot the kid cop in the face. That Demetrius Black, when you see him, you see the gang tattoos and everything.
All over,
like,
yeah.
This is a person. This is a predator. This is a person who exists to violate the space of others. He doesn't exist for any positive reason other than to prey on someone weaker. Get the draw on somebody. It's just I don't know. Our priorities are screwed up. We're doing it too much by the book and not by the reality, it just seems to me. I mean, nobody should go to jail behind pot. Nobody. But people who commit violent, predatory crimes should stay in jail for a long time. That's what the jail should be.
You know what gets me really angry, Geraldo, is we do this every single time something awful like this happens, right? So here, this officer, 25 years old, murdered on the street by somebody who shouldn't have been on the street. But we say this every single time, yet this guy was back on the street. And, you know, I just finished reading former police commissioner Bernard Carrick's book, which is all about this, by the way, how we've screwed up the prison system in such a major way by putting these people behind bars, so many of them who don't deserve to be there, and ruining their lives. And there'd be room for a jerk like this, for a thug, for a murderer like this. He could stay there forever, but there isn't room for him because we have so many people behind bars who don't deserve to be there. And it's so messed up. And thank God that Bernie is out there speaking out about it because it needs to be said.
From Jailer to Jail, Bernie Carrick's best-selling book. Mm-hmm. Hello, you're on the line. What's up?
Yeah, I got a question for you. You're a lawyer.
I am.
You know the laws, okay? Years ago, they passed a law in New York State. You're caught with an illegal loaded gun. Guess what? Minimum 3 years in jail. This guy Blackwell, in November, breaking windows with a brick in a car in a house and waving around an illegal loaded gun. Yet 6 months later, he's back on the street with an illegal loaded gun, shooting cops. The law is not used rightly. In the Bronx, it goes from a minimum of only 34% of people caught with an illegal loaded gun go to jail. In Queens, it's the highest, with 76%. Everybody else falls in the middle. What's going on? We're complaining about this, that, and everything else. How about complaining, okay, you especially, getting our elected politicians who let all this crap slide when cops and citizens, whites, Blacks, Hispanics, Asians are all getting gunned down when the people doing the shooting should have been in jail. Are we electing jokers to Albany and the city council?
Amen, Bobby. Good call, man. And Mayor de Blasio, listen up. I'm following Bobby's advice.
It's the governor. It's a state law.
All right. I'm following your advice. I'm going to bust the chops of everybody who goes after.
You just had Donovan on, who was the DA, okay? His borough fell in the middle. It wasn't as high as Queens.
Well, don't you think Donovan's done a good job as DA?
I look at the numbers. I don't see the people there going to jail 100% of the time with illegal loaded guns on the street.
Send me that survey.
It's in the New York Times. Do a Google on it.
All right, I'll check it out.
It is.
Good call. John in Brooklyn, what's on your mind, buddy?
Well, I got to tell you, I think you've been on fire the last couple of weeks. I'm really enjoying you. I'm not just blowing smoke up, you know where. I just think you've been great.
Thanks.
I want to comment on what this comes back to. This comes back to stop and frisk in our agenda that's been hijacked at City Hall. You know what I would love to ask a black mother? Would you rather that your son get a little roughed up by the police than have him get a bullet in the head like happened to this officer? Because this comes back to stop and frisk, Geraldo, because the mutts on the street know that it's hands off now, and they're going to walk around and carry guns and do whatever they want. And whites and blacks and Chinese and Spanish are going to be the victims, all because of this liberal agenda from City Hall that was hijacked by a few people.
I'm going to talk about what John just suggested right after this break. Welcome back to 77 WABC. Geraldo here along with Noam Layden, who has checked out what the caller suggested about the borough-by-borough percentage of jail time. If you have a weapon on you, what'd you find, Noam?
You know, you'll be outraged. As many as half of the most serious gun arrests by the NYPD are dismissed or not prosecuted in some of the city's most violent boroughs. This is all according to state court statistics. So these state court statistics show that last year there were more cases of the most serious gun charge, criminal possession of a weapon in the second degree, that were tossed out in the Bronx and Brooklyn than in the other boroughs. But they were still high in the other boroughs as well. So almost half of these most serious charges were thrown out. Now, there were a couple of different reasons why. The problem stems from a combination of factors ranging from the way cops sometimes lump the defendants together or mishandle evidence. So that's part of the problem. But also, prosecutors a lot of times want the federal courts to deal with these cases because the penalties are a whole lot stricter if they do it that way. So, but either way, almost half of these cases never are prosecuted. So you think about all these times these cops are finding the people on the streets with these guns, they're back on the streets again.
And this Demetrius Blackwell is such a classic example, and I appreciate that caller, and he can call back and get kudos for pointing that out to us, because we will bust the chops of these prosecutors. On the issue of stop and frisk, Noam and I disagreed about this for years. I suggested, having lived through the bad old days, the late 60s and 70s and into the 80s in New York, and see the urban decay and the bottom falling out of the real estate market and unemployment and murders both soaring. And then watching how under Mayor Giuliani in the beginning in the 1990s, how the city really turned itself around. It began with Ed Koch and fairness. And a lot of that had to do, I think, with stop and frisk and aggressive policing and proactive policing and broken windows policing. But I also remember, and this was Noam's position, I don't want to speak for you, buddy, but, you know, being on Fifth Avenue in front of Mayor Bloomberg's house when Reverend Sharpton showed up with 10,000-15,000 protesters, many of them young men, talked about how their lives were ruined because they had been stopped and frisked and they found a couple of joints on them, and because they had a record, they could no longer get city jobs. Many of them said they were tossed out of public housing as a result.
They have to use public defenders who don't do a great job. They you know, trade cases for other cases. So these people are sent up river, have done nothing wrong except had a bag of weed on them.
So my position has moderated to the extent that now that the city, now that Bill Bratton, the commissioner, has issued these edicts, and Kelly at the end of his long and brilliant tenure also moderating his position, a couple of joints, you're not going to jail anymore. You know, it's by a de facto decriminalization of small amounts of pot, which was the most egregious way that these kids got in trouble. But as to the act of stop and frisk itself, I understand how the dignity of young men can be offended by a policeman saying, hey, what's that you got in your pocket, if there's something suspicious. But did Demetrius Blackwell, was he empowered by the knowledge that he wasn't going to be stopped and frisked, but for the most serious kind of provocation? It is a damn difficult thing to decide. But there was Demetrius Blackwell with a gun in his waistband. Would a stop and frisk approach had prevented him from whipping that thing out, pointing it in the face of that young man, Brian Moore, 25-year-old, and blowing that hole in his head that killed him? I would take stop and frisk over the loss of Brian Moore any day. Any day. We'll return with the news after this. Welcome back, U2. Not U2, U2. 7 minutes after 11 o'clock, Angel of Harlem. Michael Goodwin wrote a searing editorial in the New York Post. Good grief, now they love cops, he says, and he has a picture of the Reverend Sharpton, the president, Mayor de Blasio. And he talks about how, well, let him tell you what he talks about. He joins us right now. Michael Goodwin, the ace columnist from the New York Post, is on the line. So you think that they're hypocrites, Michael, that they only care for the moment and then they go on and have policies that what? You tell me.
Well, good morning, Geraldo. It's worse than hypocrisy, really, because it's a very destructive habit that the only good cops are dead cops. And Obama, Sharpton, de Blasio, they never really support police who do the dangerous hard work every day. They only recognize them when they've been killed. And this, to me, is a distortion of what's really going on. The cops are heroes when they succeed, when they keep the streets safe. But instead, they're always blamed for every incident. And yes, there are bad cops. There are dirty cops. We know that. But that is the exception, not the rule. And you would not know that from the way the police are treated by much of the political establishment these days. They're always attacked first and criticized first, even before the facts are in. They never get the benefit of the doubt. And in fact, as I say, this distorts reality. It's upside down with what's happened in New York. I mean, you and I both know how this city has been changed dramatically for the better because it's safer. And it's safer because of the police.
Now, what about you right here about specifically about the death of Officer Moore at the hands of Demetrius Blackwell, a career criminal? Here, Blackwell, a career criminal, allegedly said yes when asked, is there something in your waistband, and suddenly fired the three shots, one of which hit Moore in the face. If Blackwell had peacefully surrendered the gun, which had been stolen, a different kind of hell might have broken loose. And you go on to talk about, thanks to the courts and the de Blasio attacks on the NYPD, they would have had to fill out reams of paperwork to justify why they stopped and questioned Blackwell. Do we lament the loss or the diminution of stop and frisk, Michael?
Oh, absolutely. I think that the number of shootings is up, the number of shooting victims is up, the number of murders are up, and it's all, I believe, because people are now emboldened to carry guns. Don't forget, Geraldo, part of the success of stop and frisk was in deterring people from actually carrying their guns. And one result of that is they weren't carrying guns, therefore they weren't arrested. The gun crimes weren't committed. The prison population actually fell as crime fell. In the end of the Bloomberg era, prison population was falling faster than crime. So I think you had all these double benefits, and yet Officer Moore, who was doing exactly that kind of job, approaching him in an unmarked car, in plain clothes, asking because they saw him fiddling with his waistband, and he shoots them. Imagine if they had shot him. What the hue and cry
was. Oh, my goodness. Can you imagine if it had been reversed?
That's right. And so that's why I say to call Brian Moore a hero, which he is, but he was a hero in his life, not just because of the way he died, but because of the service he provided, because of the choice he made to become a police officer. I think that is something our political class needs to recognize, because they are the people keeping this society together. And you see what happens when the police pull back, whether they're ordered to pull back as in Baltimore or in Ferguson. I mean, you see what happens in those tense situations. And I believe the problem in Baltimore, for example, is it is under-policed. You look at the murder rate. The murder rate in Baltimore went skyrocketing up in the last couple of years. What were the police doing? So the riot didn't, to my mind, spring out of nowhere. That city was under-policed, and so in a crunch, the police could not be sent in to stop it. The mayor pulls them back because they're not ready to deal with this. I mean, New York has had a very different experience. If New York had Baltimore's murder rate, we would have over 3,000 murders a year in New York City instead of 300.
Right, 10 times the murder rate. You're absolutely right. Here, Michael, let me just read your last paragraph as I say goodbye to you. Brian Moore, writes Michael Goodwin, Brian Moore was only 25. Officer Brian Moore was only 25. There can be no justice for him. And the only peace he will know is the peace of the grave. In death, he is called a hero by some of the same people who, while he was alive, saw him only as a villain. Michael, thank you. I appreciate the call.
Thank you, Geraldo.
All right, let me, there have been 12 shootings in Baltimore in the last 24 hours. You know, the news out of Baltimore, you watch the news channels, particularly CNN, which is giving it kind of round-the-clock coverage. And the big story is whether or not the knife was legal. In other words, if the knife was illegal, as the cops are maintaining, then the arrest was legal, and then that changes a lot. But if the arrest was illegal, if the knife was legal, the arrest was illegal, and so forth. And that's the big story. But remember, I got to, when did I get to Baltimore? I got to Baltimore, that would be April, let me just take it from Friday, May 1st. Okay, Friday, May 1st, Yoshesh Sheath was shot dead. Shooting victim found in the store was employee of the mini mart. Okay, so he's shot dead. That's Friday, May 1st. Sunday, May 3rd, Byron Showell shot dead. Nobody arrested. This is in Baltimore. Same day, Sunday, May 3rd, Kyle Hebron shot dead. Victim fatally stabbed in dispute outside healthcare. Monday, May 4th, right? I have that right. Yeah, Monday, May 4th, Joran Beatty. Again, or this is the stabbing. The other guy was the victim. I mean, the shooting. Another one on Sunday, May 4th. My God. So there's three on shooting victim. All right. And they don't know. And then Monday's the 5th, right? Oh, no, Tuesday the 5th. All right. So that Monday is the. I'm mixing this up. I'm screwing up. Friday had one shooting death. Sunday, they had two. Monday, they had two. And yesterday, they had one.
So six murders in four days.
Since Friday.
Yeah.
Did you hear one peep from anybody? Six dead people, five shooting, one stabbing. This can't be the civil rights issue of the era, as Elijah Cummings said. It can't be police brutality. We know that we need body cameras. We know that tasers have to replace, in terms of the first weapon used in an encounter for cops. Their police training has to be enhanced. I heard a Baltimore cop contacted me when I was there on the QT and talked about how training had been cut back for rookie officers in terms of their violent encounters and how to deal with them. So you need more training of cops, tasers, not tanks, and body cameras. But my goodness, this can't be the obsession when you have six murders since Friday in Baltimore. That should be the civil rights issue of the day. That's the civil rights issue. It's not cops. Cops sometimes do bad things. Nobody, unless they are threatening murder and mayhem, should die in police custody. But for God's sakes, don't lose sight of the forest for the trees here. This, the forest, is the violence perpetrated by these young men against each other. That should be the civil rights issue of the day. That's why I want the president here. Here it is. Stop this bloodshed. So easy. The woe is us victim mentality. So easy. Because it fits the pattern of history. History has been rotten to black people specifically, to lots of minorities. Rotten. Rotten. Slavery and Jim Crow and so rotten. And it took activists and it took the civil rights leaders, it took the visionaries to change the laws and try to even the score. And there are social issues that are intractable that have to be dealt with. But the civil rights issue of the day should be this violence, this suicide. It is suicide. 866 Geraldo, Geraldo Rivera here, along with Noam Layden. 77 WABC. The legend restored to its full vitality here. 77 WABC. Your call so important to us from Washington, D.C. Here's Iris. Hey, how you doing?
Hello, sir. How are you?
So what's on your mind today?
Mr. Geraldo.
Soy yo.
Allow me not to compliment you, to adore you for one interview that you have done with that gentleman that sit down instead of O'Reilly. What is his name?
You mean Eric Bowling?
What is it?
Eric Bowling or Juan Williams? I'm not sure. Yes. When were you talking about?
Yeah, I believe. You were talking with this gentleman that apparently he was, we had some idea. He didn't listen to you for a second that you say all sorts of this stupidity, terrorism in large Middle East until North Africa is Sunni people. Everybody that have done killing job, they are Sunni. Rarely you can find Shiite. Not that Shiite are the best.
I got you, Iris. I got you. And I appreciate the call. Basically, what he's saying, ladies and gentlemen, I got you. I got you. I appreciate it. And it's true. Like the two knuckleheads who attacked Pam Geller's hate mongering rally in Garland, Texas. Sunni Muslim extremists. I just don't understand. Nobody sees what I see in that regard. I mean, they paint all Muslims with the same broad brush. And listen, even within the Sunni Muslim religion, there are, wildly different points of view. And even within the Sunni Muslim faith, there is a tiny, tiny minority who advocate violence. But the Shiite Muslims, it's like the Protestants and the Catholics. It's like the Shiites are like the Catholics. And the Sunnis are like the Protestants. They're different in the credo. But, I mean, they're different faiths, even though they're both Muslim. But the Shiites, which is Iran, and they haven't perpetrated violence against the West in an awfully long time, and they are not ISIS, they are not Al-Qaeda, they are not Al-Shabaab. Those are all Sunni groups, splinter, hate, extremist groups. Al-Shabaab, ISIS, Al-Qaeda, the Taliban, Al-Nusra. All Sunni Muslim extremist groups, not Shiite. All right, but that's changing. We do it all around here. We span the nations, the neighborhoods. I'm going to go out to the wake of Officer Brian Moore. If the family will have me on Thursday night, and Friday you'll cover.
I'll be out there. Yeah,
you'll cover the actual funeral, and I would expect, particularly given the circumstances and the age of the officer who fell, I would hope that the people of Long Island show up, and line the streets to give him a fond farewell.
They already have. You had 1,000 people who showed up Monday
night. Just spontaneously.
Spontaneously Monday night after he passed away at Plainridge High School. So I can imagine a whole lot more will be there on Friday.
You know, I went to West Babylon High School not even 10 miles away. So South Shore folks. My dad, for years, owned Al's Midwell Diner on Broadway in Massapequa there. So right in the hood. Boy, that was, I got to tell you about those stories. I haven't even thought about those
working
stories
at the
in
diner.
So long. I was in Brooklyn Law School working nights in my father's money-losing diner because we couldn't afford to hire anybody. And that was quite an experience.
What were you doing, dishes, or are you waiting tables?
No, I was the short order cook.
You were cooking?
Yeah, short order cook. And my wife at the time, Linda, was the waitress. And my friend Danny Goldfarb, who went to Brooklyn Law School with me, was the cashier. We'd sleep in the booths there in the overnight. Wow. That's where I met Al D'Amato, who went on to be the 3-term Republican senator. He was the chairman of the Sons of Italy. And they used to come, one of our most reliable customers. They used to come, I think, every Tuesday night, every Thursday night. They come in, all these,
what were you
these sons of Italy. I was an expert in flipping eggs over light without cracking the yolk.
That's important.
And, of course, burgers.
Huh.
And, you know, we had all the usual, you know, the veal parmesan. So how do you cook the veal parmesan? It's frozen. You take it out of the freezer. You stick it in the deep fryer.
Right.
And then when after it's good and hot, you slap some cheese on it. That's the veal parmesan.
Sounds like a bad case of agita about to happen there. Oh, God.
Those are the days. Al's Midwell Diner. Broadway Mass Pickle. But we'll be out that way again on Thursday night and Friday. In Blue Point. I'm not sure, Frank, where Blue Point is. Where's Blue Point? I know it's an oyster. Right, where is it?
It's directly west of Patchogue. We call it the gateway to the Hamptons.
Okay, good enough. Okay, Frank, so what's on your mind today?
I was going to comment on what Michael Goodwin said exactly.
Sure,
if you have a, you know, what would the outcry be with these politicians if it had been reversed? If you have a second, I want to ask you about something else. Did you see on Monday, I'm watching television on Fox at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, Shepard Smith is doing the news. Wait, there's been an interruption in Baltimore. There are gunshots. Did you hear about this?
Yes, yes, I did.
Yeah, yeah. So what happens is they
it turned out that it was a perp who was running away. His gun fell out of his waistband. It hit the ground, discharged. And there were reports that he had been killed by cops. Welcome back to the program. 38 minutes after 11 o'clock. Geraldo here along with Noam Layden. Your turn, 866 Geraldo. Let's talk. Erica's reading Melissa Rivers' book on, about her mom.
Oh, yeah. Someone just handed me a copy of
it. You should read it. She was laughing out loud.
She's going to be here.
Is she?
Yeah, she's coming in for an interview. Maybe we can grab her.
Oh, say hi. Yeah, just grab her. She's so charming. And her mom was such a riot, you know. Just we mourn her passing. What's the latest on that case? Is that place back in business? That storefront plastic
surgery place?
I think
they are in business. Melissa Rivers filed a lawsuit back in January, so she can't really talk much about it. But yeah, she's going after them.
Oh, as well she should. In Queens, John's on the line. Hey, John, what's on your mind, buddy?
Hey, how's it going? I just want to touch on that situation that happened in Queens. I live a couple of blocks away from that area where that cop got slayed.
Right.
But my issue is there's so many social issues that's against blacks and
well, tell me tell me what's in your heart right now. What's going on?
It seems like I work in Long Island, so I see the residential communities in Long Island, and this racial tension back and forth is truly two different worlds. You know, in Long Island, the suburbs, a lot of these cops, you know, that work for NYPD are from Long Island, and they don't really have a, in my opinion, if you're not raised in the ghetto, if you don't really know the ghetto, you wouldn't understand the culture of the ghetto. You don't understand the science and the train of mind, the psyche of the ghetto, the victims of the ghetto, people who was raised in that state of mind, but they have to face every day. They're tired of, blacks, a lot of them being illegally searched, profiled constantly all the time. You hear the media and we're always these thugs, quote unquote, or hoods, and the hip hop doesn't make it any worse. I'm not trying to justify anybody, you know. But
did you know Demetrius Blackwell? Did you know the guy that shot the cop?
I don't know, no. But it seems to me the guy who shot the cop, like a copycat killer from the incident that happened in Brooklyn, all because of the protesters going on in Baltimore, the riots, things of that nature, and I feel like because of oppression, you know, they feel like. It seems to me it was premeditated. Like, he was waiting for a cop to come. Average guy's not really carrying guns around like that. They usually keep it inside the house until a beef happens, things of that nature. That's when they'll bring them out.
You think that Demetrius Blackwell was hunting a cop to shoot?
I think he was waiting for an opportunity to get, because over there, there's a lot of foot patrol. There's a lot of cops that, even the detectives, they come around, they harass, search, things of that nature. You don't have to do anything, really. Just look a certain way, and they'll just run up on you. It's not like out here in Long Island where you got to have a real reason to get pulled over or things in that nature.
So give me some advice. How do you fix the situation you describe? I mean, Demetrius Blackwell, forget about him. He's going, believe me, he's going to get his just desserts. But how do you fix this tension that you're describing?
Excuse me?
How do you fix this tension that you are describing?
Well, number one, it's not the situation in Baltimore to me. The media making it more racial than ever. Because there were three cops that got indicted as well. And that
three case. Black cops, yeah.
Three black cops that got indicted. So I blame the media for that. You know,
good
and
point.
Other radio stations that's trying to make it a racial issue when it really wasn't. It's just abuse of authority. Regardless if the kid had a knife or not, you know, or legal or not, it doesn't justify anyone being killed. That cop doesn't justify him being killed neither. But the thing with that cop is, I don't know how long he's been on the force. But
so how are you doing in your own life?
Somebody has a gun.
Okay, how are you doing in your own life? How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. I'm doing exceedingly well.
Well, good for you.
I'm not a statistic and not a stereotype. I raise my kids. I have two young kids. They go to a private school, you know. I work. I have three excellent jobs. You know, I work for the DOT.
Excellent.
I work for the town. You know, I'm a politician.
Excellent.
I'm a black man as a Republican.
Don't be a stranger. You call back anytime you want. I appreciate the call. Thank you very much.
No problem.
All right, man. Hey, Pia in Jersey City. Hi, Pia.
Hi, Geraldo. I was very proud of you. My mom and I were watching everything going on and flicking the channels. And I'm very proud of you and your reporting in Baltimore. But please be careful.
Sound like my wife.
Listen, you've got family. And
I do.
You do an important job, and you've been doing a job. I've watched you since, you know, I'm in your age group. And you need to be around a little longer for your family. And I know you've got good security and all, but please be careful when you're out there reporting.
You're so sweet. Marty, you got to give this lady the Charmony gift basket. This is a wonderful call. Could you stay on the line?
Thank you.
Stay on the line. We're going to give you this Charmony.
Your wife, have a wonderful Mother's Day. Be careful.
Thank you. So you're going to get the Instant Classic Genucel Eye Cream. Not that you need it. A Legendary Esotique. The Genucel Deep Firming Syrup, and a special added gift for Pia. A wonderful call, and I appreciate your sentiment. So, so sweet. I appreciate it. Here's Jim in Bayville. Hi, Jim.
Yes, hi, Geraldo. I just want, getting back to the overall situation of the state of Maryland as well as Baltimore as a city.
Go ahead.
What has transpired over 40 or 50 years to cause what's going on now is what's called liberalism. LBJ went and spent $20 trillion with all his programs for poverty. And what happened? Things were worse than ever. So this is the scam of liberalism. And it's a mental
I agree. That's why I'm a Republican. And I'll tell you, let me give you an example.
Republican doesn't mean you're not a liberal.
Right, that's true. And in some areas, like the reform of marijuana law and stuff like that, I am a liberal. But let me tell you how a Republican... It would be different in approaching these problems than a Democrat. But I appreciate the call. Maybe I should take the break now because I don't want to get into my rap, my campaign. I don't want to get into my campaign speech.
And then be cut off.
By myself. All right, it's 45 minutes after. I promise I'm going to give you my approach to dealing with these urban problems right after this. 8 minutes before high noon. Welcome back, everybody. I really want to emphasize that point I made earlier about how civil rights leaders have embraced the notion of victimization as the only thing that really motivates the forces, the progressive forces in our society. For example, now under pressure, the mayor of Baltimore has just now requested that the Department of Justice investigate the Baltimore Police Department to see if they discriminate and use excessive force. That's happening right now. So despite the fact that three of the six officers involved in the arrest of Freddie Gray were black, you have the city of Baltimore mayor requesting the DOJ's investigation of the city's police force. Now, I have not heard the city or the mayor or anyone in Baltimore pointing to the fact that we just made earlier. In the past 30 days, there have been 24 murders in Baltimore. 24 murders in 30 days. There have been six murders in Baltimore since Friday. I haven't heard Reverend Sharpton. I haven't heard Reverend Jackson, I haven't heard Occupy Wall Street for sure, all those smart alecks that know everything. I haven't heard anybody complaining about this suicide in the inner city. That's what it is. It's the inner city committing suicide. That's the kind of violence we used to have here. Baltimore has, maybe 10 times, almost 10 times the rate of homicides as New York. and there's no response from the civil rights community other than to say those cops are brutal and there's grave injustice in the world. I can say it to them blue in the face. Nobody deserves to die in police custody unless they're perpetrating or threatening murder and mayhem. But before you criticize the cops, you have to think about what they see every day dealing with the worst among us, every day. And tell you again that Brian Moore deserved to live too, didn't he? Officer Brian Moore, didn't he deserve to see his 26th year? All right, now quickly, my policies, because I do agree that the entitlement society and the victimization mentality has destroyed so much of the character of urban America. 35,000 abandoned derelict buildings in Baltimore. Sweat equity, give them to people who want to rebuild them, help them rebuild them, help them, employ them to rebuild them. But don't keep them on the books as tax delinquent liens. They're never going to be paid. You'll never rebuild it. Some of those buildings were burned in 1968, for God's sakes, in the Martin Luther King riots after the assassination of the great civil rights leader. You've got to get, I think, public housing, and I have said this before in New York City. Let's privatize it. Let's give those apartments to the people that live in those apartments who are responsible. Give them an equity stake. Let them own it. Now you're going to see how clean that lobby is going to be. Now you're going to see how well that elevator works. Now you're going to see who's doing this or that, who's acting out and smoking in the hallways or pissing in the elevator. You're going to see how soon that ends in a real hurry when those people are stakeholders, when they own those apartments. You're going to see the big difference. And you've got to understand that some of these bad habits are so inculcated in people after all these decades that you've got to do something dramatic to change it. You've got to pay for good behavior. I know they're supposed to do it. Walk their kids to school and make sure the kid is there every day and gets good grades. The dad at home. I know they're supposed to do all the, pay them for it. I don't care that they're supposed to do it in Chris Rock's words. I don't care. I want to change decades-old destructive behavior. It can be done. We've got to reignite pride in ownership, dignity. You're not going to change the world overnight, but you can start it with optimism, with the, I'm on your side. Let's do this. Let's make this better. Thanks for listening. What a great audience. You've been fantastic today, especially. Love you. Bye.